Welcome to the DMV Sportswire. My name is Chris Reardon, alongside my co-host Dan McHugh, and special guest co-host this week, another one of our dear friends, Tim Prentice. We're all DMV brats, born and bred in the area. I'm living in Moscow right now in Russia. As funny as that is that I'm doing a show about the DMV, but hey, we got the passion. Dan's, of course, in Maryland, and Tim is actually all the way out in Florida. So we're covering the DMV from all corners. And gentlemen, I think everybody knows what the big story on our show today is. Special edition, as we won't be able to record this weekend. We had to get it out here because we're just that excited. The Washington Redskins, for the first time since 1999, NFC East champions. And we'll start with Tim, your general thoughts on the game. What did you feel? Now, of course, Tim, anybody who knows you saw your hilarious video on the internet. Let's keep it clean, my friend.
I shall try, but let's not get into I hate the Dallas Cowboys, but I loved that game. Oh, my God. And anybody who wants to question RG3's knee, I'd say ask DeMarcus Ware about it.
Certainly fooled them all game, and as a Redskins fan, it just felt great because all week I heard a few talking heads saying the Redskins were going to win, but for the most part it seemed like people were picking Dallas. Though there was the constant, discussion about Tony Romo. Would he end up making the same mistakes he typically makes, which is he's now forced him to be 1-6 in win or go home games. Dan, you called it last week. You said there was no way Tony Romo was not going to screw it up. And you were actually at the game, Dan. Tell me about the atmosphere there. Dan. Tim?
I'm here.
Okay.
At the game, but texting a whole bunch of people, a couple of friends of mine, Matt Beach, and while he was there, and he said it was electric, and my old buddy Beav Trainer said it was just loud, just flat out loud.
Yeah, and I think the great moment was at the very end of the game, seeing the whole crowd saying hail to the Redskins and watching the Dallas Cowboys be forced to sit there on the sideline, take in this atmosphere, knowing that they're going home, hearing their most bitter rival's song being sung by tens of thousands of fans. It was a great moment. And you're right. Look, RG3, his knee looked better, Tim. I'm not sure that it's 100%. But RG3 at less than 100% was good enough for 63 rushing yards. we'll take it. Now, we'll get to the Seahawks in a minute because their fans are already talking massive trash. But that's nothing new from last week where the Cowboys fans were talking massive trash.
Yeah, we got redemption against the Seahawks. You know, in 2006, I believe it was January 6th, that they knocked us out of our last playoffs at a stadium out there in Seattle.
Well, they're actually the team that's knocked us out of our last two playoffs. If you can remember, with Mark Brunell, there was a game when Matt Hasselbeck was quarterbacking there. They knocked us out. And then the year that Jason Campbell got injured and Todd Collins led us to the playoffs, the Seahawks knocked us out. So we've played them twice in a row. But this time we're playing at FedEx Field, which I think is an advantage, certainly, not only because we're playing at home, but because the Seahawks Stadium is a pretty intense place to play. But we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's talk more about this game. Clearly the man of the match was Alfred Morris. Gotta love the guy. I was trying to come up with different nicknames for him. There was Alfred the Anvil Morris. Our buddy Tim DeLisi came up with the Black Jesus or Alfred Moses. And I don't know if he came up with them, but he threw those out there. And I liked what NFL.com came up with. Alfred the Butler Morris. And what I added to that was, he is Alfred the Butler Morris because every time he leaves you feeling like you just got surfed. So, fantastic performance. It was fun watching him. I mean, you had to think back to the old school Redskins pounding the ball, shredding up teams. Now, of course, before that was more often than not John Riggins and Clinton Portis as well. But what do you think of this guy, Alfred Morris, Tim, and does he deserve Rookie of the Year?
Oh, Rookie of the Year. As a running back, I have to say yes. But then you've got RG3 and there's Russell Wilson out there and Andrew Luck's got to be in that talk. But Alfred Morris, he just reminds you of that old school smash mouth, where I'm going to run over you, take three people to tackle me kind of running backs. I don't know. I mean, look at his numbers compared to Portis on his first season, and he's looking like our guy.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you, and I just think it's a little bit unfortunate that he gets overlooked because of the fact, well, he plays in the same team as RG3. You've got perhaps the best quarterbacking class in NFL history, you know, in 1 year playing right now. So there's so many other names to look at. And yeah, I feel like Alfred Morris is going to probably end up getting overlooked. But Tim, this guy's a rookie, and he is the second leading rusher in the NFL.
Yes,
pretty
sir.
Fantastic stuff. And look, Redskins are playing like a complete team right now. Okay, this game against the Cowboys, our defense was able to confuse them, throwing a lot of blitzes at Romo and kept him off balance most of the night. This was the guy who came in as the hottest quarterback in the league, Tim, and didn't look all that great against us. Now, started off with two quick interceptions in their first two drives. That had to kill his confidence. But he made some big plays after that. But when it really counted, he did the thing that everybody expected Tony Romo would do, which is throw a big pick. And that was a great play by Rob Jackson. You got to love his performance there, especially coming in for the injured Brian Arakpo. So Redskins looking good right now, Tim. The passing attack wasn't stellar, but it didn't need to be. Defense played good, forced turnovers, and the running game was working. So why not stick with it? Yeah. Dan, are you back?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What happened?
technical difficulties. Sorry.
Okay. We'll have to get our crack team on that. Right. Yeah. Crack team. All right. Fair enough. And look, I want to talk about a couple things outside of the game. The fact that before the game, there was no focus on the Redskins. The mainstream media was all worried about talking about the Cowboys and Romo's trial by fire. Would he repeat his same mistakes, or would he finally get some vindication? After the game, it wasn't about the Redskins and how good they played. It was how Romo had cost the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Should the Cowboys get rid of Tony Romo? So the Redskins are still getting no respect. So I have to ask you guys, what do the Redskins have to do to gain some respect from the mainstream media? It's not that no one's talking about them, but come on, 7 wins in a row from 3-6. I think we should be the big story, not quote unquote America's team.
You got to keep winning. You know, I was watching a post game on ESPN, and it was Trent Dilfer and the other guy, I can't remember his name. And the guy asked Trent Dilfer, he goes, "Don't you kind of feel sorry for Tony Romo? He gets all this criticism and all, or you know, all this scrutiny or whatever." And you could tell the look on Dilfer's face. He's like thinking, "Yeah, right. I won a Super Bowl. I lost my job. You know, I have a better postseason record than Tony Romo." And this guy gets, you know, I don't get any respect. I never got any respect in my career. You could just tell Dilfer was like, you know, give me a break. Romo, you know, was not the story. He lost. I think the Dallas Cowboys should, you know, get rid of him. He's 9 years in the NFL now, and he's won one postseason game. I mean, that's pretty pitiful, if you ask me.
If RG3, if we win against Seattle, RG3 has a better postseason record than Romo.
There you go. Can't argue with that. Another thing on the periphery outside the game is I was watching some of the NFL preview shows on NFL.com, and God, yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll at least give Troy Aikman credit. When he covers a Redskins game, he doesn't come across as being completely biased. Watching Michael Irvin doing the breakdown for the, you know, the preview, he was just totally showing his Cowboys colors. I mean, look, I get it. You played for the team. You won several Super Bowls. You're an icon in Dallas. However, if you're going to cover the game in a professional output, you have to be unbiased. It was ridiculous how much he was just giving the Redskins zero credit. Did you happen to see any of that, Tim?
No, I missed Michael Irvin's comments. That was probably when I was, you know, making my video at the end of the game. But Irvin doesn't deserve to be a commentator. I haven't heard much of any two coherent thoughts come out of his head at one time. And this is back when he used to commentate, I think it was for Fox not too long ago.
It's very difficult. Very difficult to watch that NFL network, especially when they got Michael Irvin and Deion Sanders together, and they're both, in my opinion, I can't stand listening to either of them.
Well, even Sanders, I think, is better than Irvin, but that's you know, again, that's something that's kind of on the fringe of the game. It's not really the game itself. And one other thing, a buddy of mine who's a huge soccer fan, I've been trying to get him into American football. He's a British guy who lives in Los Angeles. I had him watching some of the game, and he absolutely begged me to go to Cowboys.com before the game. He said, you'll have a great laugh at it. And I said, No, I said I can't do it, man. It's like against my ethical code. I said Redskins fan, you will never catch me, you know, dead typing in the words Cowboys.com. He just kept insisting, Chris, trust me, it'll give you fuel against Cowboys fans forever. And I'm thinking, okay, what kind of trash are they talking that's any worse than we've already heard from some of our friends who are born in the DMV who are freaking Cowboys fans? For Christ's sake.
Beltway Brett.
Yeah, there you go. And that's pathetic, by the way. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. But, so finally I gave in, okay? I trust this guy. I said, okay, I have a feeling this is not what I expect. Oh, and boy, was it not. Now, let me start off by saying I don't want to piss any of our listeners off, okay? So I will start off by using a famous quote from Seinfeld. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you type in cowboys.com, it takes you to an internet website for a dating service of cowboys, and I'm pretty sure the subject matter is of the non-heterosexual variety. Let's put it that way. I really don't want to offend anybody. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, but the real spin, it's not about that, but the real spin is that the Cowboys apparently were so cheap they wouldn't throw up $250K to have the rights to their website. When you type in Redskins.com, you go to the Redskins webpage. When you type into Cowboys.com, you get a gay cowboy dating service. So,
oh, my goodness.
So there you go.
Never let it be said Jerry Jones.
I'm confused. Is that not their recruitment list for next year?
Perhaps. As many bad things as I've said about Dan Snyder over the years, man, that's pretty low. Jerry Jones, not that there's anything wrong with that, but to have that on your website or on your team website, that's Jerry Jones whoring out his team's website for some advertising money, I guess.
Well, no. Apparently, they could have bought the rights for $250K, but they decided not to. And Jerry Jones, as rich as he is, I couldn't. I was shocked. $250K?
Yeah. Can't shell it out. Billion-dollar stadium. Can't afford $250K.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff there. All right. Well, that's a little
building Jerry World, I guess. You know. So.
Okay, Dan. You kind of left us for a moment. What did you feel about the actual game itself? I mean, being at the stadium, the atmosphere.
I got cut off. Unfortunately, as I was saying earlier, I did not actually get to attend the game. My cousin, who supposedly had a ticket, never called me on Sunday, and I called him several times, and I never heard from him. So I did not go to the game. I was very mad. So my Sunday was not. I mean, I watched the game on television. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go. I was pretty upset, but you know,
that's pretty terrible.
But I didn't. You know, I guess the positive side is I didn't spend $100 on a ticket, and I didn't freeze my butt off either. But certainly, from what I did hear, listening to 106.7 The Fan yesterday from people that were at the game, that it was a sea of red. You know, there was more Redskin fans than Cowboy fans, which in the past hasn't been the case. And the atmosphere was electric from what people were saying on the radio. That what a great, what a great day, what a great game. And it was they were on yesterday on 106.7 The Fan, they were just sticking it to Cowboys fans all day long. It was great. So.
Now, Tim, before we again focus back on the game, you know, right now it's everybody's seen the game. They've probably watched the highlights 100 times. I think sometimes it's fun to analyze these things on the fringe. Tim, you had an interesting perspective on something we mentioned earlier, Beltway bred fans who have no connection to the Dallas Cowboys but are kind of begging for attention, essentially, and have shunned the burgundy and gold. With a cleaner version, Tim, because this is a family-friendly show, I want to give you a moment to sound off on these types of fans.
On the Beltway bred Dallas fans, I you know what? I don't even have to. This is who they are. They are people. They're under the age of 30. They were about 10, 11 years old in 93, 94. So they missed the 80 Super Bowls, and they missed the 1991 Ripken. I think we were 17-2 Super Bowl win, and they grew up during the Aikman era. Aikman, you know, Emmett, and that guy that shouldn't be on TV broadcasting, Irving. Anyway,
cool.
And throw Deion Sanders in there, but and that's it. They want that attention. The Cowboys came up, and so they jumped on the bandwagon. you know, those Super Bowl wins.
And I know, Tim, that you have a brother who was one of those people, so I'm sure that really especially hits close to home.
Oh, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, the thing about John, love my brother, but he is a Fairweather fan. Last season, he was a Baltimore fan. A couple seasons before that, he was back to the Skins. He's got jerseys for every team. He just jumps on whoever. He has a Megatron jersey. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and a lot of those fans, you know, the ones that are the Cowboys fans, you know, the Beltway bred fans, that's what they are. They're front runner fans. They're Yankee fans. They're Laker fans. You know, they just like the team that's or the Miami Heat. They like the team that's popular and winning, and they don't have any loyalty to anything. And and I think they're the worst kind of fans that I've ever, you know, I've experienced that going to like Redskin games against the Eagles, horrible Eagle fans like that aren't from Philly and Cowboy fans that aren't from Texas. Yankee fans that aren't from New York. Yeah, they're the worst kind of fans in general.
And, you know, I totally agree with you, Dan. Not only the fact that they're the worst kinds of fans, but I think they're impure fans. They don't get to experience the kind of elation that me, you, and Tim felt on Sunday evening or Monday morning for me, actually, here in Moscow, where when you're a true fan, okay, you stick with your team through the ups and downs. Like you said, you and Tim both mentioned, Fairweather fans, they only stay on the ship when things are going well. When it starts sinking, they hop off quickly and find another ship that's staying afloat. When it comes to a true fan, and you've gone through as you know, for the most part, bad memories as we have being Redskins fans in the last, you know, 15 years, and you get this moment, they can never quite feel the elation like we have because they don't stick around for the bad times. So, you know, they say in life you got to see the bad to appreciate the good or you got to feel pain to experience joy. Well, as a Redskins fan, I think that's never been truer. We've been through some tough times, and now we've come out and we get to feel this amazing joy of a season that, hey, and I don't want to jump ahead of myself, but we've seen a lot of a lot of teams that finished 9-7 or 10-6, Giants, Steelers in the past, who became hot towards the end of the year and ended up going all the way. Now, who knows if that's going to happen, but this team does believe it can happen, which I think is pretty impressive. And
look at the comments that Shanahan made at the on the bye week, you know, that we were going to start evaluating for next year and we were 3-6. And I don't know if that lit a fire or whatnot.
Okay,
the
it seems
fans
like
and the players, and no one's talking about it. You're going back to the point you made. No, you know, it was how the Cowboys collapsed rather than the skid. Does anybody have a winning streak like us right now in the NFL? I don't think so.
No. The Broncos, I think, have won like 12 in a row. So,
besides Shanahan, I think Shanahan. You know, they were saying all the best team. I think Shanahan was trying to light a fire in them, and that's why he said that we're going to be evaluated teams here next year. I don't think he had written this team off yet. I think he was trying to, you know, coaches are good. You know, good coaches play mental head games with their players, and that's what I think he was trying to do. He was trying to scare them.
And we gotta give a lot of credit to the coaching staff. I mean, I know, Dan, you were pretty critical of Kyle Shanahan last year. I was as well, and I felt like he deserved it. But this year, phew. That offense, it's not just been, okay, you got RG3, he's amazing. They've found a way to build a scheme there that really works and has teams just completely off guard right now. You saw how many times RG3 was able to completely take DeMarcus Ware out of the pass rush. And when you can do that to a team's best pass rusher, that is huge. Real quickly on the subject of your rant online, Tim, I've got a girlfriend who lives in – actually – we met, but she lives in Uzbekistan. She's coming to Moscow soon. And she played on New Year's Eve your video to many people over there, and they thought it was hilarious. So you're now internationally popular for your video. And her name is Kate Sabakin, and actually she came up with a great quote last week. I don't know if either of you watch Game of Thrones. Tim?
Game of Thrones, no.
Okay. Well, one of the key phrases of the show is winter is coming. And she said before the Redskins game that the Redskins will show them that winter is coming. And it's usually about war. And guess what? We took the war to them. Good performance by the defense, which, by the way, they came under fire early on in the year. The offense has been outstanding for over half the year now. Even when we were losing early in the year, it was still a pretty explosive offense. And this is a team that's still missing Fred Davis. I think the Redskins have like four or five players over 500 receiving yards. So, okay, we don't you know, Garcon is clearly the number one. We don't have necessarily one guy who's the – well, Garcon is the number one, but one guy who gives us the most production. We have a team that works together on all cylinders. We know how to spread the ball. It keeps defenses completely off balance, not to mention the scheme. You never know who he's going to throw to when he does throw. So the big weakness has been the defense, but guys, they've played a lot better.
Yeah, they're picking up. And our secondary is not looking as terrible as it did during those first eight games, you know?
Yeah, they're not getting as gashed as much. And right now, since their winning streak, the Redskins have a plus 10 differential on turnover ratio. So, okay, maybe they're a little bit of a bend but don't break defense. They don't really get a ton of sacks, but they cause turnovers, and they have been keeping offenses off guard. And, you know, it's amazing, guys. 7 wins in a row. I remember this is the third playoff run in a row for the Redskins, the previous two coming in the Joe Gibbs 2 era, that have been the result of incredibly long winning streaks. It started with a 5-game winning streak the first year they made the playoff with Joe Gibbs.
Went on that tear at the end of the season, and they won 5 games in a row, I believe.
5 games in a row, for the most part on the back of Clinton Portis, because Mark Brunell was kind of a shadow of his former self. And then 2 years later, when Jason Campbell went down, and of course the unfortunate pass to Sean Taylor, that got the team motivated to win 4 in a row, finish 9-7, and make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So anything else you guys want to talk about the Cowboys game? I think we mentioned the big moments. It's played good.
I'll say this. It goes back to your point about, you know, about suffering. You know, it makes you appreciate something like this so much more. You know, for the Albert Haynesworths and the horrible tenure of Vinny Serrato as general manager and all the horrible pre-agent signings over the last decade since Dan Snyder's bought the team. You know, this going through all that crap makes you appreciate as a Redskins fan so much more. You know, winning and actually appreciating it. Realize it's not an entitlement. It's not something, you know. So, like, you talk to Steeler fans, they're so arrogant because they're so used to their team winning all the time that they just expect their team to win. You know, we're Redskins fans are actually appreciating the fact that our team is winning because we're so used to, we've been accustomed to losing for the last decade. Yeah.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And this is something that I've actually said a couple of times. Patriot fans, Steelers fans, you know, they've got it flipped. You know, they don't appreciate the win like Skins fans do, because to us it means so much more because we've gone so long without. That you've got the Patriots fans and the Steelers fans, they're so used to winning that, you know, when Brady goes out there and throws for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns and it's lights out in the second, you know, quarter, the third quarter of the game, you know, those Patriots fans, they're just like, oh yeah, we won again, that's awesome. Whereas when they do get a loss, that loss is so devastating and so just destructive to their mindset that Skins fans are like, you know, hey, okay, we got a loss. We lost to Cincinnati this week. We should have beat them, but we lost to them, and that's okay because we're going to come back. And then when we get that win next week, you know, it's all cupcakes and butterflies, man. I mean, we're on cloud 9. They can't even reach it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, that Hail the Redskins moment was just great. To me, you know, it was right before the new year. That is my favorite moment so far of the year in the sporting world anyways. But let me tell you this, guys. We've talked about the Cowboys. I want to get to the Seahawks because, look, the main highs of the Redskins game, the rushing attack, the offense did just enough in the passing game. Defense played good, and Romo is who we thought he was. So, simply put, let's wrap up on the Cowboys discussion. As much as I'd love to talk about it forever and rip these Cowboys fans, I'm just going to take the high road. Eat some humble pie, just appreciate it. I enjoy insulting them a little bit, but I'm so happy right now that I can't even think of anything negative. Let's talk about the Seahawks, which has gotten my blood boiling a little bit, because these fans, if you go to any of the websites, NFL.com, ESPN.com, any NFL forums, they're talking some massive crap. Now, I understand this happens in sports, not the end of the world, but I appreciate a little humility from fans, and it seems like the Seahawks aren't giving us credit. The bookmakers already have them as the favorite to win the game. So your thoughts on this, gentlemen? And look, this is a very good Seahawk defense. So this is going to be a lot more difficult than the Cowboys. What do you guys think about the game? The keys to the game for you?
Well, right off the bat, I mean, I have disliked Pete Carroll ever since he jumped ship from USC to the Seahawks because he knew that the scandal was going to hit the fan on, and it basically ruined the program about Reggie Bush having a car and all that. And, you know, Pete Carroll's a liar. He has no character. He has no credibility in my book as a human being. So I don't like the Seahawks just because of Pete Carroll alone. So I hope to God we beat the Seahawks. But I know they've been killing teams this year. They've been running up the score. Didn't they beat Arizona 58-0? I mean, the last three, they went three games in a row where they scored 50 points. So it's they've got an incredible offense, that's for sure. So it's going to be
including whooping up what many people consider the best team in the NFC, the San Francisco 49ers, in a recent meeting.
Yeah.
Tim, you mentioned earlier, we talked about it, two consecutive playoff losses in a row to Seattle. I've had confidence in this team all year, Tim, but we're playing a really good defense, a good quarterback in Russell Wilson who. As good as RG3 been, Russell Wilson's been tearing it up. I think his last eight games, something like 16 touchdowns, two interceptions.
I don't think anybody's going. I don't think anybody's going into this game thinking that they're not going to put some points on the board. And you know our offense is capable of doing that. Now we haven't. You know I don't think we've gone over 30 now in 2 weeks, but it's the first time we've got a real good offense. The keys. For me, is got to be about Seattle's defense. I mean, not only are they good, but they're quick. Like, they're one of the fastest closing defenses in the league right now. And so our ability for the yaks, the yards after catch, and the yards after scrimmage, and everything else like that is really what's going to turn it. We gotta make the first guy miss with this defense, because there's going to be two or three just a second or two right behind him.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about the speed of this defense. I guess my biggest hope is that we can use their speed to their disadvantage in the sense that we're going to play I don't know that our pistol option offense is going to confuse them as much as it did the Cowboys. This is a more disciplined defense than the Cowboys, but maybe we can get them to overcommit and throw in some trick plays that are really going to kind of give us some explosive plays in the end. We'll see what happens with that. We've been doing a good job at misdirecting defenses all year. This is going to be one where I think it's really important. I think it's also going to come down to running. Okay, people have talked about our defense. It's usually the pass defense has gotten the most criticism because we're the fifth best rushing defense in the NFL. So teams don't typically run well against us. We kept Adrian Peterson to under 80 yards, I believe, when we played the Vikings. So the way I'm looking at it right now, it's coming down to who has the better game on the ground because, the Seahawks have a better secondary than we do, so that does concern me. But Marshawn Lynch is fantastic. Alfred Morris is fantastic. I think it's whichever team can stop the running back first and keep the opposing offense off the field. I mean, that's time of possession is huge, especially in playoff games, in addition to turnovers. But look, the bottom line is the Redskins do have good time of possession. They're able to turn the ball behind Alfred the Butler Morris. And RG3, for the most part, just hasn't made mistakes. I mean, we're talking five interceptions in a rookie year, and it's not like he wasn't throwing the ball. He's got a ton of touchdown passes, a ton of rushing passes. It's just going to be good. And like I said, Seattle's one of the, probably, I think it's the loudest stadium to play at in the NFL. I think they've even surpassed Kansas City at this point. So it's kind of a blessing that we won the division and didn't back in through a wild card, which there was some scenarios that could have worked out. To have this one at home, because I think FedEx. Yeah, exactly. And I think that was huge that we get to play this one at FedEx, because it may not be as loud as Seattle, but it gets loud. And I'll take the high road again. I'll say I respect the Seahawks fans, okay? They do put on a great atmosphere. Seattle in general loves their sporting teams, and they're great fans. But you better hold your trash talking up a little bit, because should things not go your way, be prepared for the recoil. Yeah?
Yeah. Well, and then, hopefully, let's just hope history doesn't repeat itself, because the last two times we've met the Seahawks in playoffs, they've had our number. Again, they said that totally different teams from then. So,
our quarterbacks were Mark Brunell in the twilight of his career, and Todd Collins, okay, he did okay, but, I mean, we weren't exactly playing with elite firepower there, and I think Santana Moss and Chris Cooley during both those runs were really our only two reliable receiving options.
Yeah. No, we've got a much better team.
The Seahawks have this good secondary, but we have at least five receivers who can get it done, not to mention three capable tight ends right now in Logan Paulson, Niles Paul, and Chris Cooley. We haven't seen anything out of Aldrick Robinson in a couple weeks, but we know he's there. He's got the speed. Leonard Hankerson's had a big week. Garcon's had several big weeks. Joshua Morgan and Santana Moss have made huge plays. It's you never know who's going to step up on the Redskins receiving corps, and you got to account for all these guys. So
yeah,
it should be interesting. Any other thoughts on this, on the Redskins Seahawks game, guys?
Well, I think playing at FedEx is going to play a big advantage. I mean, yes, Seattle's known for that 12th man. They're known for getting loud. I think they have the largest decibel rated, even over the Dallas Stadium, which hosts over 100,000 people. They're still the loudest decibel rated on the field. But now they got to turn that around. You know, they're used to it being loud when they're on defense, not on offense. It's going to be loud when they're on offense this time around. So I think that 12th man is going to play a good part. You know, 90,000 fans at FedEx, we can get loud.
Fair enough, and it's not that Russell Wilson's been terrible on the road, but he has actually been much more effective at home, so I think that helps us. But look, I got massive respect for Russell Wilson. Very good, solid young quarterback. Like I said earlier, I think possibly the best drafting class quarterbacks in NFL history. I mean, you've seen all the busts, and this year there's just been a ton of guys who have stepped up. So I'm really excited about it. That's going to be the big story between everybody. You got two athletic quarterbacks who can get it done with their arms and on the ground, and I think this is the first time, I want to say in NFL history, but maybe just for a really long time, that three rookie quarterbacks have gotten their team to the postseason. So you got RG3, you got Russell Wilson, and Andrew Luck. And speaking of Andrew Luck, let's shift gears and talk about the Baltimore Ravens a little bit. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about their loss to close out the season against the Cincinnati Bengals, 23-17.
Kind of a meaningless game. They didn't even play their, you know, Flacco didn't play most of the game. I don't even, did he play at all? And
Flacco played like two drives, and so did Ray Rice,
yeah,
and they took them all.
So.
So, and look, the Bengals already had clinched a playoff spot. The Ravens had already clinched the North. Had the Ravens lost the previous week, okay, it could have been a little more interesting, but no, this was really pretty much a meaningless game. So let's instead focus on the preview of Baltimore-Indianapolis, and this should be an exciting game. Andrew Luck, everybody's comparing him to RG3, seeing who's going to do better. It's probably going to go throughout their career. He's done a tremendous job getting his team to the playoffs. The Ravens haven't looked great overall, but in their last truly competitive match, they looked like a little bit of their old selves the way they started the season against the Giants. And you got the veteran Joe Flacco against Andrew Luck. Do you guys see Luck, I don't know, making some key mistakes in this one to cost this team the game? What do you think so far, Tim?
Well, I remember back to the last time the Colts played the Ravens in the playoffs in Baltimore. It was a few years back, and it's one of the most boringest games that I ever remember watching. And it was like a field goal. Ended up, you know, came down to like, it was like 6-9 the final, and the Ravens lost. That was back when the Ravens had Steve McNair, and you know the Colts had Peyton Manning. Terrible game. This time, I mean, you know, the Ravens haven't looked so great this year. It is good they're getting Ray Lewis back. I assume they're getting Ray Lewis back this game. We'll see. And we'll see what, you know, Andrew Luck does it, you know, in a big time game. So also you got to factor in Chuck Lugano, you know, recovering from leukemia or whatever. I guess that's been an emotional thing they're talking about all year with the Colts. And he's a former Raven. Isn't he the former Ravens offensive coordinator?
Sounds about right. And,
yeah.
Look, and this is also history, too. Baltimore and Indianapolis. There's no doubt that there's no love lost for this team that's traveling into Baltimore, as fans are still, even though they have the Ravens, are still bitter about that to this day and constantly root against the Colts. Tim, your thoughts on this game, and who do you got winning this one? It's the veteran in Joe Flacco maybe hasn't played great, but
I've got a little bit different take. You're right. The veteran Flacco hasn't been playing great, especially down that last stretch there when they were like, you know, they had it one game away, when they were one game away from being in the playoffs for like the last 5 weeks, 4 weeks, and they just couldn't seem to get that win. You know, they fought and lost, and they came down to the Skins. They could have beat the Skins. I have a little bit different take. I think weather is going to play a huge factor in this game, and they're coming into Baltimore. And I don't know. I'm pretty sure they still got snow on the ground up there. It's going to be cold. Factor in maybe a little bit of that freezing rain DMV loves so much. And I think it's going to throw that, you know, that dome team off for a little bit of a curve.
Absolutely. I was going to say it gets cold in Indianapolis, but hey, it's in the dome. They play in the dome, so they're probably not quite used to that. And I don't know. I think Andrew Luck's been playing great, but it seems like he's got ice in his veins. So I don't want to say he's going to come out and have rookie jitters. But this Ravens defense is not what it once was. I have a feeling this is going to be a high scoring game, guys. The Ravens defense has not been playing great overall. The Colts don't have a stellar defense either. And both
Flacco's
teams,
got the offense he wants now. He's got that no huddle, him calling the plays kind of go.
Yeah, and he did look good 2 weeks ago against the Giants. And I think that the key to them, that performance there, was utilizing your best player, Ray Rice. And then Bernard Pierce, their backup, was also running well in that game. So they've got two guys. I think they need to constantly feed them the ball, work off the play action. And at that point, I could see Joe Flacco picking apart the Colts defense. I'm leaning towards Baltimore in this one, but the way Andrew Luck's been playing, nothing would surprise me, especially considering the Ravens have been kind of Jekyll and Hyde this year.
And you got to take it into account also that the new offensive coordinator of the Ravens, Jim Caldwell, is the former head coach of the Colts, and so he knows a lot of how the defense was run by that team and what those players that played for the Colts, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. So I'm sure he would like to get the W over his former team that canned him last year after going, you know, what, 2-14 or whatever it was there, you know. Jim Caldwell could be Jim Caldwell could be a good factor in helping the Ravens get the W. So.
Yeah, and it's looking like it's going to be the end of the careers probably for Ed Reed and Ray Lewis. I mean, these guys can't hang around forever. They're still playing at a high level. I'm not saying it's over this year or even next year, but 3 years down the road, they're going to have to start looking towards retooling this Ravens defense. Because like I said, they've got some younger guys or guys who aren't as aged as Lewis and Ed Reed and Haloti Ngata and guy like Terrell Suggs. I mean, they're still not super youthful, but they're not as old as Lewis and Reed, who are the leaders of that defense. But they're going to have to retool and rebuild that defense, because now it was always before the Ravens' defense and the offense kind of, you know, just didn't make mistakes and then they could win. Well, now the offense has caught up. You know, maybe they've been a little bit anemic at times, but they've proven they've got huge big play potential. And I like the receivers they got there. Torrey Smith is explosive. He's always just one sprint away from the end zone. And Anquan Boldin, the big target receiver. Jacoby Jones is a playmaker as well. I'm liking this one. Any final thoughts on the Ravens game?
The Ravens fans will be, you know, bloodthirsty and angry because of their hatred towards the Colts, you know, because of the history, like you were saying earlier. Don't go into Baltimore, into a bar in Baltimore wearing a Colts jersey and expect you're going to get some crap from Ravens fans.
Yeah, even if it's a Baltimore Colts jersey, which
well,
they still
have. Johnny United's jersey, probably not. But no, if you're wearing a Peyton Manning jersey or something, yeah, you're going to get some crap.
I don't know. These Baltimoreans might be drunk at this point. I wouldn't want to push it. So
yeah,
but fair enough. And that should be exciting. Look, I'm a Redskins fan. We've said it on the show. But I don't have this, I don't know, hatred for the Ravens that some Redskins fans do. When we play them, I can feel this Beltway rivalry. But what do you guys think? I mean, as all three of us being Skins fans, Tim, do you feel this kind of strong rivalry with the Ravens beyond when we play them? Or like, you watch the Cowboys, Eagles, and Giants, you always take joy in them losing. Do you feel that way about the Ravens, Tim?
You know, during the week leading up to the Skins-Ravens game, a friend of mine forwarded me a couple of videos about it's these two guys bar talking. It's a Ravens video, and it's one guy giving out all these reasons, and the other guy just saying RG3, RG3, and the other one was against Orioles and the Nationals and everything. And while we started off in the preseason games for the last couple of years, you know, just kind of lightly building a rivalry, playing against them, but not really. We bring in, you know, a couple regular season games in. I don't feel the rivalry. You know, I look back on 80 years of Redskins heritage and, you know, 3 Super Bowl wins, World Championship wins, and all the players and Hall of Famers to come out of that. I don't think anybody can look at the Baltimore Ravens as the Baltimore Colts of old. I don't think there's any heritage there because the Colts still exist. So you're looking at a fairly young, you know, NFL team in the Ravens, and there's just, they don't have the heritage that, you know, the Redskins have. Maybe in like 15, 20 years, get them another Super Bowl, you know, maybe make it a go, maybe make some big games happen. Like you know, if there ends up being a Super Bowl, AFC, NFC Skins versus Ravens Super Bowl, you know, then you're going to start seeing a real rivalry build. But we're never going to see them in the playoffs. And so unless one single regular season game comes down to it, and that doesn't normally happen until the last week or the last 2 weeks of the year, I don't think we're going to see a big rivalry start building between these two teams. It's just going to be a friendly little banter among office coworkers.
Yeah, and usually when you have a rivalry, when you talk about a good rivalry, you imagine a scenario like Redskins and Cowboys where it goes back and forth, you know. Both teams put up an effort, and well, for a while, it wasn't a rivalry with the Cowboys because they owned us for a while, I'll admit that. But now it doesn't seem like those days are going away, and at least have gone away for this year, thank goodness. But with the Ravens and Redskins, it hasn't been much of a rivalry because, you know, like I said, you need give and take. Well, it's pretty much been the Ravens handing the Redskins losses. So this was, you know, the first time I think we really were able to step it up big time against the Ravens, and we needed the game more than them, to be fair. I don't see the rivalry. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I remember my eyes being open about the dislike, though, of the Redskins up in Baltimore. I didn't know that existed at first until I wore a Redskins shirt or hat or something in Baltimore. Some guys started giving me a lot of crap for it, and I had always grown up an Orioles, you know, all of us growing up Orioles fans in the DMV area because there was no baseball in D.C., so I always had an affection for the city of Baltimore because of the Orioles, and I didn't know that, you know, that they despise the Redskins so much up there, but a lot of Ravens fans do not at all, and they never did. Even when the Colts left town, they didn't take a liking to the Redskins, and you know they don't like us. I don't feel that hatred or dislike towards that city at all because I'm still an Orioles fan, and actually, you know, they do like the Capitals up there. So that's like the one thing Baltimore and Washington that brings the cities together. That's like the one sport that does a team.
Well, I know that area also has some DC United fans, so they like the soccer and the hockey. But yeah, I guess with the Skins, it's probably part of its bitterness. I mean, when the team left Baltimore and they were sitting there depressed, sad, they lost their you know their favorite Colts, and then of course the Redskins are there, and maybe they felt a little what's the word I'm looking for, guys? Bitterness, yes, but they felt resentment. There you go, resentment towards the Redskins. So, and it took them a long time to get a franchise back, so I can see that. I'll never profess to be a Ravens fan. I'm not going to sit there and wear purple and black. I'm not going to be someone, like you said earlier, Tim, a bandwagon jumper. I'm Redskins for life, always have, always will be. And if the Redskins are out of it and the Ravens are in the playoffs, I will root for the Ravens. I'm from the DMV. I love my home area. I'm not going to sit there and go buy Ravens gear and put on a Ravens jersey, but I'll root for them, and we will, of course, cover them because this show is about our area, which is – so interconnected across, you know, two states and the city that's our nation's capital. So in the future, I'd like to get our buddy Jerry Frazier on, who's going to be our Ravens correspondent. And he knows more about the Ravens than all of us, so I think that'll certainly enrich the content of the show. All right, gentlemen, that's it for Pigskin. Let's spend a few moments before we head out. Excuse me, sorry.
Well, before we jump, I just want to say one thing. I want to bring one subject up, has anybody else noticed, and maybe it's just me, but that the era of the pocket passer is seemingly dissolving, and quarterbacks have taken on this new role in the last couple of years as these rookies start coming out, and they don't get, you know, a year or two under, you know, the guise of a veteran quarterback, but they just go out and they just, like running backs or wide receivers, they get drafted and they play. I mean, is this something we're seeing now in the NFL, or is this just, you know, a fluke of this generation's quarterbacks?
Well, you know, I think it's something that's,
the mobile quarter, you know, the mobile quarterback you're talking about. I think that, you know, because of sports, the way it's evolved, it's better. You know, these guys now are in better shape than they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago. The day of like the big old fat quarterback that just could throw the hell out of a ball is over. You got to run. You got to, you know, you got to dodge tackles. You know, you're not just standing back there anymore. You know, like Sonny Jurgensen used to say, his famous saying was, "You don't throw with your stomach." You know, well, so I definitely agree with you that the mobile quarterback is definitely, you know, we're seeing that, you know, with Michael Vick and, you know, over the years with Donovan McNabb and with RG3 now. You know, Jason Campbell, he was somewhat mobile. I mean, yeah, so I agree with you, Tim. The day of the pocket passer is there aren't as many as there used to be. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, I still think there are some good pocket passers in the league, but for the most part, and Tim, you know, my take on this is I think there's a difference. Not all of them are scrambling quarterbacks, and you said mobile, so I understand what you're saying. You have to. Some people don't understand the difference between scrambling and mobile. Okay, obviously, all the guys who are scrambling quarterbacks who have the ability to churn off 20-yard runs are mobile quarterbacks. Obviously, so RG3 fits into that category. I think Russell Wilson fits into that category, and a couple other guys in the NFL, including Cam Newton, but and well, Michael Vick, if he can stay healthy. But I think it's not so much that you need to have a scrambling quarterback, but that you need to have somebody who can manipulate the pocket. The days of having a guy like Drew Bledsoe, who's a statue in the pocket, are pretty much over. Even guys like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Drew Brees, as successful as they have been, though they're not scrambling quarterbacks. It's the fact that they are mobile quarterbacks. They're guys who can elude pressure. Big Ben, I wouldn't call him a scrambling quarterback, but he can certainly elude pressure. So I think the quarterback position in the NFL, especially with the way blitzes, the blitz packages have become so complicated, and it's really hard sometimes to see what defenses are doing. I think this ability to actually be mobile, to be able to get out of the pocket and make plays on the run, is pretty much essential to winning a Super Bowl. There's guys who have it more or less. You know, I wouldn't say Eli Manning is super mobile, but he does have an ability to kind of feel pressure and slide around the pocket. But a guy like Aaron Rodgers, he's way more mobile than Eli, for instance. And he's not a scrambling guy, but he does have the ability to extend plays, and I think that's huge in the modern-day NFL because when a quarterback has that ability, well, as a cornerback, you can't sit there and cover a receiver forever. And if the quarterback can extend the play 4 or 5 seconds, I mean, that's huge to get your receiver open.
I think that, you know, the good thing about these more quarterbacks that are able to run more and be more mobile is they're exciting to watch for fans. Unfortunately, though, there's a higher, you know, higher risk of them getting injured and their career is not lasting as long as it used to be. So, you know, that's the good and the bad with the mobile quarterback, in my opinion. So.
Well, and that's another reason why the NFL, I think, is making all of these new rules to protect the quarterback, is because they realize that, you know, running football is fun to watch, especially if you're a Redskins fan or a Steelers fan. But the thing that really excites a lot of fans is these explosive passing games. So they've done a lot to protect protect their investment and to keep their product entertaining. Tim, any other thoughts on it?
No, Tim, you got anything, Ted?
No, I think that's pretty much it, and that's the way that it's becoming. I don't want to say RG3 is kind of revolutionizing the position, but I can't think of another quarterback who has the ability to play action fake like he does. I mean, get that ball really into Morris's chest and then pull it back at the last second. But with this pistol offense, is that they're actually designing run plays for the quarterback, for RG3, and it's something that I don't think we've ever really seen. And we have mobile quarterbacks and scrambling quarterbacks, but I set over 750 rushing yards. I mean, speaks for itself. And
what's scary about it, Tim?
Big change.
What's scary about it? People are saying, people are gonna there's a lot of bitter fans who want to attack the Redskins. Oh, you know, the Skins, they're gonna figure out this offense next year, and RG3 is not gonna be as successful. He's gonna have the sophomore slump. Well, the bottom line is, I'm not so sure about that because. You know, right now, this is only year one with RG3 and Kyle Shanahan together. So I think the system is only going to get more complicated over the year. They're going to throw more reads into it for him. They're going to develop the overall passing game more, that you're going to have so much to look after. I agree with RG3. I think this team, you know, their ability and what they've done this year is great, but the sky's the limit for the future as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, let's move on briefly to basketball before we head out. Not really much to get excited about as the Wizards followed up their fourth win of the year over Orlando Magic with a 10-point loss to the Chicago Bulls. Never really a close one, to be quite honest. And you know, one of the big keys to the Wizards winning their previous matchup was that they had two 20-point scorers for the first time all year, and Nene and Jordan Crawford. And in my mind, Jordan Crawford's the most key piece on that team right now with John Wall out, and he missed the game due to injury.
Yeah,
so
they didn't have Crawford on Saturday against the Bulls, so yeah, that was definitely did not help in the game.
And Crawford's not – he can play a little point, but he's more of a shooting guard. So I think when John Wall comes back, you got a pretty good backcourt there. They're coming up with a game against Dallas next, the Dallas Mavericks, so I'm thinking that's going to be another loss. My question to you to close out the show, guys, is there a possibility the Wizards will actually go through the entire season without winning two games in a row?
Huh? What was the question?
I think that's a distinct possibility.
The question, Dan, was is there a possibility that the Wizards will go through the entire season without winning two games in a row?
Oh.
I mean, they are getting John Wall back.
That's
what we hear.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, like what Tim said, yeah, that's probably, yes. If they have two wins in a row, I don't know, I'll be shocked.
What's your over and under on that one, guys?
Yeah.
What's your over-under on that?
The over-under on the two-game win? Go Terrapins.
There you go. Fair enough.
70-30. I don't know. The 70-30.
70-30. Okay, fair enough. Well, look, I tell you what. Sorry we didn't discuss too much Wizards. There's not really much to be excited about right now. They just keep losing. We're waiting for John Wall to come back and for them to give us a reason to be excited about them. And look, there's Pigskins getting ready to go away, guys. Hopefully the Redskins and Ravens will both make deep playoff runs. I think it would be not only great for the area but for the show if they make it all the way to the Super Bowl and have a Beltway Bowl. But in the meantime, you know, it's just enjoy it while it lasts, knowing that at the very least, Pigskin's gone in just a little over a month. So
and
we might as well
done.
Spend time talking about the Pigskin as much as possible while it's here. Because
what a great year.
Once the NFL season's over, it's going to be kind of a quiet time of the year. No Capitals, a terrible Wizards team, and not much. You know, we'll definitely focus more on college basketball then. And hopefully we'll have some teams playing well there, because it's looking like after, you know, starting in February, it's going to be kind of boring in the area for a little while.
Until soccer and baseball start up, and, you know, at this point, it's definitely not looking like we're going to get an NHL season this year, I don't think. And so not going to have any Capitals hockey to talk about, unfortunately.
And my closing thought.
It's already half over.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely not happening. And they're all playing over here in Russia right now. And, you know, Ovechkin and Backstrom both play for Dynamo Moscow, team in the city I live in. I can't root for them, though. I'm a supporter of another team who's pretty good in soccer, but their hockey version. Now, see, a lot of the clubs here in Russia have teams that are, you know, owned by the same people that play in hockey and football. It's the same team name. You know, one's hockey club Spartak, for instance, and one's football club, or, you know, soccer, as we call it over back in the States. My team, Spartak, is terrible, but you got guys like Pavel Datsyuk is playing in Moscow right now for CSKA. You got all the stars playing over here. So KHL has actually become a more fun product to watch, and they're going to benefit from this, the way the NHL is just shooting themselves in the foot. Tim, I want to actually, you know, me and Dan have talked about it, but before we let you go, I want to get your quick take on the NHL lockout.
I think it's absolutely absurd. I think I for the most part agree with the players, but I mean we had a threatened football lockout, and what happened? Congress got involved, of all things, and NBA went possibility on lockout, and then, you know, I think it was Jesse Jackson or somebody stepped in and everything else, and the NHL doesn't even happen, and no one's, you know, saying anything. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. We talked about it. We won't labor the point. But my final thought is, if you think right now, this is the first time, and I think maybe forever since all these teams have been in existence, that – and I'm going to say five major sports, because I do consider – Tim, I know you're not like maybe a huge soccer fan, but I think soccer is actually quite growing in this country. And DC United tends to sell out the Wizards. I guess no surprise there. But they're getting good numbers at the stadium, and league-wide, MLS is actually growing. So I consider soccer the fifth major sport. And I'm not going to sit here and, I don't know, put them in order of what they're important to me, but I love soccer. So I'm going to include all five sports. DC United, Baltimore Ravens, Washington Redskins, Washington Nationals, Baltimore Orioles, and Washington Capitals, if you go back to last year, have all made the playoffs in their last season. The only team that's sticking out there is the Wizards, and it may be several years for that, but every team, major team in the area, has made the postseason in their last run. Pretty great time to be a DMV sports fan.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And
not to mention VCU making the Final Four, the second, you know, mid-major team from Virginia area to do that.
Hey, Tim, I got a question I wanted to ask you when we were talking about basketball earlier. Living in Florida, what is the divide between you know, like the Orlando Magic fans and the Heat fans? Is Florida more of a Miami Heat team, or Orlando Magic, or neither? Or at least your take.
Yeah, for the most part, Orlando Magic exists only in Orlando, and everyone around they go to see, like, I got good friends down here, big time Celtics fans, and they only go to Orlando Magic games when the Celtics come to town. But other than the Heat and the Lightning, Tampa Bay Lightning down here, that's what you see, is the, you know, the out of towners and the vacationers, and they'll show up for the games. Like, I went, you know, 2 weeks ago, I went to the Rams Buccaneers game, and I decked out in Redskins gear because, you know, I support my team. And there weren't even enough fans to trash talk me for wearing Redskins stuff. I heard it from one guy. And Buccaneers are still blacked out down here. They can't even sell the stadium out. I am a little bitter about hockey because I'd get to see a DMV team. You know, I'd go down to the Caps games. I mean, Lightning tickets, I was buying Lightning tickets for $6 a ticket.
Gotcha.
And I would be down there rocking my, Caps red. And there was a decent amount of Caps fans there, but hockey in this town is insane. But other than the Lightning and the Heat, I can't think of another major sports team. I mean, look at Jacksonville. They're probably going to move to L.A. And I can't think of another team where they have a huge following of fans.
What about the Dolphins? I mean, the Dolphins aren't what they used to be, but back in the day, you know, because of Dan Marino in the 90s and stuff, I guess I'm sure they're still somewhat of a popular team in Florida. To some parts, anyway.
Probably a lot more towards Miami. You know, I'm about seven and a half hours from Miami.
Yeah.
But I still run into Dolphins fans every now and then. Yeah, you'll see some Bucs stuff. The big surprising team that's really been picking up, and I think it's for a lot of the part it's gone mostly throughout most of Florida, and that's the Rays. People are really getting behind the Tampa Bay Rays and dropping off on the Marlins. From what I've seen.
Wow. All right, guys, we're entering dangerous territory here. This is the DMV Sportswire, and Tim, I enjoy listening to you talk about it.
Wanted to get his perspective on the Florida sports market a little bit because he lives
no,
there.
No, I understand. But
it's nowhere near the passion and everything of DMV. You know, I will never ever root for any team down here, even if they go. I mean, like I said, I went to the Bucks Rams game. And during what's his name's, I can name two players on the Buccaneers. And during Freeman's like sixth interception in that game or fifth interception, I jumped up screaming, "Yeah!" because I was staring at the little ticker that showed the Skins final over the Eagles, and people were looking at me funny.
Fair enough. And look, it just goes to show you that if you're a true DMV fan, born and bred, no matter where you're living, overseas, in the other area of the country. We still stick to our team. So in the meantime, thanks, gentlemen, for joining us for this special show.
Thanks for having me on.
I know we're all on cloud nine right now. So in the meantime, I will just say goodbye, DC, goodbye, Maryland, and goodbye, Virginia.
Goodbye. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.